Jnanam Param Svatmadaha Prakasham Pruvacha Kasmai Bhagavan Samagram Apikshamam No Grahanaya Bharata Patanjasayad Brijanam Tadema My Lord, kindly explain to us, if you think us competent to receive it, that transcendental knowledge which gives enlightenment about yourself, in which you explained before to Brahmaji. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. A pure devotee like Uddhava has no material afflictions because he engages constantly in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. A devotee feels afflicted without the association of the Lord. Constant remembrance of the Lord's activities keeps the devotee alive, and therefore Uddhava requested that the Lord please enlighten him with the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam as previously instructed to Brahmaji. This very revealing purport, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada is explaining the essential nature in which a pure devotee lives eternally. The devotee is always eager to hear more and more from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Parampara system means hearing from Krishna through disciplic succession. It is not that there is a difference between hearing directly from Krishna in His physical presence or hearing from the spiritual masters and the great sadhus who speak the words of Krishna. Because transcendental sound vibration is full of divine potency, and that is Krishna's own personal potency. It is beyond time and all geographical considerations. One who speaks the glories of the Lord can actually connect us directly to the Lord. And we find this in this wonderful narration of Srimad Bhagavatam. Uddhava heard from Krishna, and Vidura is so anxious to hear from him. After all, Vidura was a very elderly gentleman and a great devotee of the Lord. He was one of the most prominent members of the Kuru dynasty. He was traveling for many years due to his home being impossible to remain. although living in a comfortable environment in Hastinapur, Duryodhana was so very frightened and envious of Vidura. Just see the nature of one who is attached to material life. Whatever material attachments we have make us vulnerable to such misery and so many offenses against others. Why does one commit offenses? Simply out of fear of our material attachments. That's all. Whether it is our gross or subtle material attachments, we offend others because we are frightened that they may, by their own good qualities or by their own powers, somehow or other infringe upon what we believe is meant for ourselves. And we are all living in this fear. And we are all committing so many offenses due to this fear. And this is creating such disturbance in our spiritual progress. So we should be very thoughtful about this principle, and therefore become very detached. Bhogaiswarya prasaktanam tayapavita chetasam vyavashayatmakapudir samadho nabhatiyate. If one is too much attached to material enjoyment on any level, then the resolute determination for devotional service cannot take place within one's heart. And this was the case of Duryodhana. He was hearing from the greatest Mahajans in all history directly. Who was preaching to him? Bhishma. Bhishma was personally preaching to him. And Vidura was preaching to him. And such great personalities as Krishna himself was personally preaching to him. Yudhisthira Maharaj tried to preach to him. But yet, because of its material attachments, somehow that message could not penetrate his hard heart. So why is it that although we are attending Srimad Bhagavatam class and we're actually hearing directly from Krishna, the potency of parampara is the same message that Krishna spoke to Arjuna, the same message that Shukadeva Goswami spoke to Parikshit Maharaj, we are hearing it. Not only does it have the same potency, but it is sweeter. The nature of the disciplic succession is as the message passes down from one great devotee to another, it does not lose its potency, but it gains potency. Because the devotees are so dear to Krishna. When a devotee speaks the glories of Krishna, Krishna impregnates more power each devotee that speaks it. And therefore, the message becomes sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. Krishna appeared, Prabhupada said, only 5,000 years ago, which is very recent if you were absorbed in the history of Srimad Bhagavatam. If you're absorbed in the history books of this material world, 5,000 years ago is before any civilization could have possibly been existing. It's very long, ancient times ago. Why? Because material history is based on the temporary, imperfect situation of the physical body. That's all. But Srimad Bhagavatam is a history based on the principle of the eternal soul and the supreme soul, Krishna. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam explains what happened before the creation, the dialogue between Krishna and Brahma. Where are they going to find that by digging in the earth? You cannot find it. It's before there was an earth. It's before there was any anything. Brahma was just sitting on a lotus flower stemming from the navel of Padmanabh Vishnu. But through disciplic succession, we are given exactly the words, word for word in the Sanskrit language, what Krishna spoke to Brahma and what Brahma spoke to Krishna. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear narrations and histories that happen in other universes and in other millenniums and in other lifetimes of Brahma. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we read about what's happening directly in the spiritual world beyond this material existence. So this is the basis of the great Vedic literatures. Therefore, when we consider how the Bhagavatam is describing eternal time and the eternal transcendental pastimes of the Lord and the eternal teachings of the Lord, Prabhupada said, just recently, only 5,000 years ago, Krishna appeared. Just very recently, only 500 years ago, Christopher Columbus discovered America. And that's very ancient history for Americans. At the same time, Prabhupada says, very recently, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. So this transcendental message which is received through this eternal form of disciplic succession is Krishna's means of delivering his divine message to everyone. So Duryodhana was hearing this message directly from Krishna, directly from the greatest devotees of Krishna. Even now, 5,000 years later, we're listening to the prayers of Bhishma and we're becoming completely purified. Bhishma was daily preaching to Duryodhana that you're wrong, you're a nonsense, give up your attachments, honor the Pandavas. Five villages! They're willing to give you the whole kingdom, they just want five villages. Give it to them! Bhishma was telling. Dronacharya was telling. Kripacharya was, everyone. Even Dhritarashtra was telling. And ultimately Krishna himself personally stood right before Duryodhana and said, Duryodhana, don't destroy your own life. If you do not follow this instruction of mine, not only you, but your whole dynasty will be destroyed. You will lay on the hard, cold ground of the battlefield, dead. If you do not listen to what I say, just give these five villages to the Pandavas. It's all they ask. If you give these five villages to the Pandavas, they will support you. They will honor you. They will be your servants. It is Yudhisthira's promise. Yudhisthira was such a noble soul. He sent Krishna with this message. We will support him as the king of the whole world if he just gives us something. Krishna explained, if the Kurus and the Pandavas are united, Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna are working under you. You will have all the power and glory of this earth. Who will possibly come to confront you? But if you do not give them these five villages, you will die miserably. Krishna told him. And Yudhisthira Duryodhana listened. And he only became more and more fearful. And then when he saw that Krishna was preaching to others the same thing, he was thinking that Krishna was going to turn everyone against him. So he decided that Krishna should be put in jail. So he sent
his soldiers to arrest Krishna and put him in prison. And when Krishna saw them coming, he simply laughed. And then he revealed his Virat Roop. What kind of form? Brahma came from his forehead, Shiva came from his chest, Balaram and Arjuna came out of his arms. Then he assumed a huge form, and he had thousands of arms with celestial weapons, and his eyes and his body were shining like millions and millions of suns. No one could even look at him. They were so blinded by his effulgence. Duryodhana saw the Virat Rupa. He heard the direct instructions from Krishna's own mouth. But yet he could not give up. He could not surrender. He could not accept the path of bhakti. Why? Bhogaishvaya prasaktanam taya paritatyetasam. Because he was too much attached to material life. He could not hear. So why is it that we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and we're not experiencing ecstatic devotion? Because we still have material attachments that we are not willing to let go of. If we are actually really detached, when we hear the speaker in Parampara repeating the words of Krishna, we'll be in the same ecstasy of Arjuna. We're hearing from Krishna. It is the words of Krishna. Krishna is personally present in the sound vibration of his glories. But we still have these material attachments. And therefore, we must simultaneously cultivate knowledge of what is the truth and what is illusion. And detachment on the basis of that knowledge. Detachment means ultimately to accept what is favorable for devotional service and to reject what is unfavorable for devotional service. And we should be willing to give up what is unfavorable, even if it is so difficult. And we should be willing to accept what is favorable, even if it is very difficult. And to the degree we are willing to perform this austerity, to this degree Krishna will actually manifest himself in his holy name. He will actually reveal himself when we hear his divine message. Uddhava was speaking to Vidura, who was such a dear friend of Krishna. Vidura went through so many hardships in his life. But for a devotee, the more hardships that come, the more we are eager to hear about Krishna. The more we are eager to chant his holy names. Last night, till quite late, we had a counselor's meeting. And we were discussing how to hear our japa as we are chanting. Because it is so important. Srila Prabhupada explained, of all the instructions in all of his books, the most important is to chant 16 rounds attentively every day. But how seriously are we taking our japa? Are we just taking a nice stroll, experiencing the nice ocean breezes of Bombay, with Krishna's name in the background? Or are we speaking to other devotees with Krishna's name sometimes filling in the gaps between our discussion? Or are we trying to make up for lost sleep that we are always longing to achieve with Krishna's name somehow or other just making our sleep more spiritual. Or are we planning our day's managerial activities, but adding some salt and pepper to our managerial thoughts with Krishna's name? Or are we contemplating our lusty desires and thinking it's all right if my mouth is chanting Hare Krishna while I'm contemplating these sinful thoughts? I'm Krishnaizing my lusty thoughts. Or are we fixing our mind on Krishna attentively? Are we struggling and straining to just put that mind on Krishna's name? Like a child crying for his mother. When a child is in danger, the child cries out. One day during the Sunday feast, the devotees asked His Holiness Jayadwaita Maharaj, why do we chant loudly? And Jayadwaita Maharaj said, because we're serious. If you're being attacked by an assassin in a dark place, he's coming to kill you, do you say, help? If you say, help, no one will take you seriously. But if you say, help, then everyone will start coming. Oh, this person must be in need. So when we chant Krishna's name helplessly, loudly, then Krishna will take us seriously. Therefore, Gauranga Mahaprabhu taught us to loudly cry out the holy names of God. Lord Chaitanya would be in ecstasy and chant. He would chant the names. It was as loud as 10 million lions roaring simultaneously. It was so loud that it was practically shaking the universe. And anyone who would hear it in close proximity, their eardrums would be shattered to pieces. But because they were his devotees, with his yogamaya potency, he protected their eardrums. This was the power of how Lord Chaitanya was chanting so sincerely. So as we were discussing the great need of very attentively chanting our japa every day, Raghunath Prabhu was explaining the best rounds he ever had in his whole life. It was at around 4 in the morning on the day of the earthquake in Latur and Kilari. Do you remember? Here at Sri Radha Gopinath Temple, I remember it was at 4 o'clock, I think. I was laying on the floor in my room, and all of a sudden the floor was vibrating and books were falling and the doors were going and everything was shaking. And I heard downstairs all the little children from the Gurukula orphanage. They were loud as I ever heard them chanting Krishna's holy name. I was thinking, when I heard the children chanting so loud and I heard the brahmacharis chanting so loud, I was thinking, let this earthquake go on forever. This is so wonderful. But somehow or other, due to our past impious deeds, the earthquake ended. And then we went back to falling asleep during our japa. But Raghunath Prabhu said, during that earthquake, he said, he chanted his japa so attentively. Actually, he realized Prabhupada's statement of calling out for the holy names like a baby calls out for mother in danger. Because in reality, we are all helpless. In illusion, we think that we are not. Under the illusion of Maya, we're thinking we can protect ourselves by my intelligence, by my money, by my family members, by the government, by the doctors. Somehow I will be protected. But we are helpless. At any moment, dangers and death will come upon us, not may come upon us, will come upon us. But only Krishna can save us. So therefore, we should really, really sincerely chant the holy names. And when devotees are put into crises, the devotee actually appreciates it as an opportunity to purify his heart or her heart. So Vidura was such a devotee. He was such a well-wisher and such a good preacher. The ninth offense to the holy name was to not preach to the faithless. But sometimes great souls like Vidura, they are willing to even sacrifice accepting the reactions of such an offense just to show compassion to another soul. And we see what kind of reaction he got. He preached to Duryodhana. And Duryodhana, even though Duryodhana, he rejected Krishna's preaching, he rejected Bhishma's constant preaching, he rejected Drona's preaching, still Vidura did not give up hope. What kind of Vaishnava is Vidura? And then Duryodhana threatened to kill him if he didn't leave the kingdom immediately. He wasn't allowed to bring anything with him but his breath. So Vidura just bowed down in the core of his heart to Lord Krishna and left home. Left his wife, left his family, left his home, left everything to go on pilgrimage. And yet Vidura, such a saintly person, Dhritarashtra was standing right there and didn't even say anything to protect him when Duryodhana was threatening his life and kicked him away. But Duryodhana received his karma. He died a miserable, painful death. But it wasn't just that. Krishna arranged for Duryodhana. He could have wiped him out at the beginning of the battle. But Duryodhana had to personally see with his own eyes every single one of his 99 brothers slaughtered by Bhima. He had to see his entire dynasty destroyed before his eyes. And then after the whole battle was lost, and he saw what shambles he left the whole world in, and he saw how his whole family was devastated, all because of his unwillingness to hear from Krishna. That's all. And then after seeing all that and suffering, unbearable mental pain and anguish, then the person he feared and hated the most in the whole world, Bhima, was the one that defeated him personally and had him laying there on the ground with broken spine, and he didn't die. He didn't die. Physically, he was in total miserable pain. pain mentally. He was in total miserable pain. And on top of that, people were coming and insulting him. Hare Krishna. This is the reaction to his Vaishnav aparad. And Dhritarashtra, he suffered more than Duryodhana because he had to watch all this. Sanjay was explaining everything as it was happening. And he was hearing about, every time he heard about his sons being killed and Duryodhana suffering, his heart was just breaking. But still, Vidura went to Dhritarashtra. He went all the way back. He stayed in this world only to deliver him. This is the nature of a Vaishnava. So it is Vidura who, in this very, very difficult situation of life, just after the battle of the Yadu dynasty has left, Krishna has left, he is approaching Uddhava. And Uddhava is explaining here how Krishna instructed him. And then in the coming verses, something very wonderful and instructive is being given. Uddhava tells Vidura that now I cannot speak any longer because my heart is so bereaved in separation from Krishna. I'm just going to Badrik Ashram to take shelter of the Lord in his form of Narayan Narayan Rishi because this was the Lord's order to me. And Vidura asked Uddhava, please, to explain to him those instructions that Krishna told him at the last meeting. Here, Uddhava is explaining in this verse that he instructed me the same thing he instructed Brahma at the beginning of creation. So Vidura is asking, please tell me what he told you. And then Uddhava showed his own natural humility and how he expressed that through the following of proper etiquette. He said to Vidura that you should hear these teachings from Maitreya Muni. And Srila Prabhupada explains that Maitreya Muni was senior in age to Uddhava. In fact, Vidura was old enough to be Uddhava's father. And similar was Maitreya Muni. And Maitreya Muni was there present when Krishna spoke to Uddhava. So Prabhupada explains Maryada Vyatikrama, which is the offense of trying to show one's own knowledge in front of a superior Vaishnava. When there is a superior Vaishnava in presence, we should not be eager to give another instructions. What to speak of instructing the senior Vaishnava? But rather, we should always understand that if a senior Vaishnava is present, that person should actually be given the honor of giving instruction. Unless, of course, the senior Vaishnava personally instructs us to speak. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would do like that. Even devotees who were only devotees for 3 or 4 months, and the only book they had to read was Who is Crazy? and Krishna the reservoir of pleasure. And they were just listening to Prabhupada's lectures. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would sit in the class and he would tell them, "You give class today." And the devotees would be very much not wanting to give class. But Prabhupada said, no, I want to hear you give class. And Srila Prabhupada would simply sit and listen, relish the broken words of his little baby children trying to talk Krishna conscious philosophy. Just like a father, when he sees his son just beginning to talk, he's saying, "Mama, Dada," just some broken words. The father is very happy, he's very pleased. "Oh, my child's learning to talk." So in the same way, Prabhupada was so pleased with his transcendental parental affection to hear his devotees starting to speak Vaishnava philosophy in their own broken language. What to speak of how devotees try to quote Sanskrit. But Prabhupada was so happy that they're trying to repeat this message somehow or other. And he told us, "You just go on hearing and you go on repeating, and soon Krishna will empower you with all knowledge. The more you give this knowledge to others, the more Krishna will give this knowledge to you." This is transcendental arrangement. So devotees, if someone would come, they would never preach when Prabhupada was present. But sometimes Prabhupada would tell, "Preach." If you listen to many tapes, sometimes a guest answers a question, and Prabhupada says to one of his disciples, "You tell him." Prabhupada, the disciple would take Prabhupada's blessings and tell them. Prabhupada would be very happy. Of course, sometimes he would say, "No, not like that." Prabhupada was so eager to hear about Krishna. When devotees would speak, and when the devotees would repeat Prabhupada's words, it certainly wasn't that Prabhupada was learning anything new from them. It was like the devotees were just taking water from the Ganges and offering it back to the Ganges. But Srila Prabhupada would be so pleased, he would be ecstatic just to hear this message. Because he understood that what he heard from his spiritual master, he is repeating. And what these disciples are speaking, if it is the same thing, it's like hearing from my own spiritual master. It is an eternal truth. So Prabhupada was so pleased. And he would ask his devotees to write for Back to Godhead magazine. And sometimes his servants would read to him the articles by other devotees. And Prabhupada was so pleased. I remember one time there was a publication called Brijvasi Spirit at New Vrindavan. And Prabhupada, whenever the issues would come out, his servant would read the whole magazine to him. And Prabhupada was very happy. And it was all, there was an article by Prabhupada, and the devotees would just write what they heard from Prabhupada. And one devotee, one of my godbrothers, he was only a boy at the time. He was only about 15 or something. And somehow or other he ran away from home to join Hare Krishna movement. He was Italian, Catholic. And Italian Catholic parents are sometimes very attached to their children, much like India. Would you agree? But he wrote. So this boy, he lived in New York City, and he met devotees on Harinam Sankirtan, and he was thinking, "This is so nice, this is so nice." And he started going to the temple, And then he decided to join the movement. His parents were so outraged that they kidnapped him. And they had him deprogrammed. You know what is deprogram? How to explain deprogram? It means they physically hire people who are professionals. They capture you. They actually tie you up and put you in a car and take you to a place and put you in a house that nobody knows where you are, and all the windows are boarded with wood and all the doors are nailed shut, and there's no way you can get out of the house. And then they just blaspheme Krishna and his devotees constantly, 24 hours, and they don't let you sleep. If you try to sleep, they put ice on you, so you can't sleep. So you're just hearing blasphemy constantly. And they're trying to convince you somehow or other you must give this up. And they don't let you out until you completely give up your faith in Hare Krishna movement. And when they're completely convinced that you'll never go back, then they let you out. But they let you out, you have to go to your parents, and they're always watching. You have heard about these things? So this young boy was put through all this. So, you know, ultimately he said, yes, yes, I don't believe in Krishna. I was cheated. So then they said, oh, very good. And the mother paid them $5,000, about 2 lakhs of rupees. And then what did he do? He ran out, jumped on the first bus, and came to New Vrindavan. So he wrote an article explaining how he Prabhupada saved him. And Prabhupada was in India, I believe, or somewhere. And someone read him this article, and Prabhupada was so happy. He said, this boy's life is perfect. So Prabhupada would love to hear the articles written by his devotees. But what will we... Prabhupada is transcendental consciousness. He's immersed in the highest rasas of transcendental love. But yet the little broken words of some devotees with hardly any realization saying, you're not this body, Prabhupada's so happy to hear it. This is the nature of a great devotee. Sometimes we think, oh, this devotee is not so advanced, I don't want to hear him give class. I will go outside and talk gossip with my friends instead, or I will go to sleep. But Prabhupada was so happy and eager to hear. So we should be so happy and so eager to hear wherever the message is being repeated properly in Parampara, from whoever is repeating that message properly through Parampara. And that eagerness will attract Krishna's mercy. So when the senior Vaishnavas instruct us to preach, even in their presence, then we must. But we should not be anxious to do this. We should understand it is actually offensive to instruct someone in the presence of a senior Vaishnava. It is maryada vyatikrama. So because Maitreya Muni was nearby, Uddhava was speaking his realizations, and he was speaking the mood of his separation from Krishna to Vidura. But when Vidura asked, please tell me the teachings that Krishna gave you, he felt, I'm not qualified, because there's a senior Vaishnava present. You should actually hear from him, Maitreya Muni.
This is the natural humility. Even the great Paramahamsas, they follow this etiquette very carefully. Because it is the observance of proper etiquette that really makes our devotional service pleasing to Krishna. And all the principles of Vaishnava etiquette, Trinadapi sunichena, tarorapi sahishnuna, amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. That is the basics of all Vaishnava etiquette. To always think oneself lower than a straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree, to offer all respect to others and to expect none in return. In fact, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, how they explained this verse was so wonderful. It is explained that many different groups of people who worship Radha and Krishna, or Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they are anxious for these mantras which awaken one's original ras in the spiritual world. What are they called? Huh? Siddhi Pranali is one thing. That is when you're told all different imaginative information. But there's also particular mantras which are meant, but they are meant to meditate on, to develop your bhava as a gopi or a transcendental eternal associate of the Lord. But Bhakti Vinod and Bhakti Siddhanta said that the mantra that will, the meditation, the perfection of Siddha Pranali will be realized, not just imagined, realized when we meditate and practice this sloka. Trinadapi sunichena, tarorapi sahishnana, amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. So this should be our goal, this should be our purpose, to somehow or other live by this verse. And we should not honor anything that distracts our attention away from this. In the association of devotees, we shouldn't try to become big. We should try to become Trinadapi Sunichena. We should not aspire for a high position. Uddhava, he aspired to be a blade of grass, so that he could get the dust of the feet of Krishna's devotees on his head. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami prayed that I want to take the dust of the feet of every devotee on my head and worship it. Not only the great devotees who are Paramhamsas, but even the new bhaktas and bhaktins. The new people just coming, if they're coming for Krishna consciousness, I want to worship the dust of their lotus feet. This is the mood of a true Vaishnava. Haridas Thakur, he prayed, "The only desire I have, my Lord, if you want to give me a benediction, is in every birth I can take as either a dog or an insect in your devotee's house so I can get the remnants of their food, their maha maha prasad." Kalidas, he vowed he would take the remnants of every Vaishnava in Bengal. And he did it, somehow or other. He would just go and serve devotees so nicely and give them nice prasad, and without embarrassing them, he would get their maha prasad.
Sometimes we get it, but we embarrass the people and make them feel terrible. But that is not the way Kalidas did it. Sometimes when we take someone's Mahaprasad, Mahaprasad, we're actually not anxious for the mercy. We're anxious to reveal to everybody how advanced we are because we're taking another devotee's remnants from his plate. Very ego is too complicated. Just see this devotee left this sloppy, drippy doll, and I'm going to show the world how advanced and humble I am by drinking it in front of everyone. But actually, Kalidas, he did it. Nobody knew he did it except Lord Chaitanya himself and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. He would secretly, no prestige, no fame, he would give prasad to that one devotee, Jadu Thakur. He gave him a mango, then he was hiding in the forest until the seeds and the skins of the mango that were eaten by Jadu Thakur and his wife were thrown in the garbage pit in the back of the house. Then still, he waited till it was dark because he did not want to embarrass. And then in the dark, with no one around to see him, he started sucking the seeds and sucking the skins. There was no material flavor in it. It was just a dry skin and a dry seed. But somehow or other, the saliva of Jadu Thakur and his wife were on that seed. And therefore, as he was sucking, tears of ecstasy were flowing from his eyes. Sometimes we are eating delicious kheer and samosas. There's no ecstasy coming out of our eyes. He's eating a seed. Because this is how much he was so humble and he wanted to honor and love the Vaishnavas. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya showed special favor to him. He let him eat his own remnants and drink the water from his own lotus feet. Something he did not allow anyone else to do. So it is this quality of service that is the goal of our life. And wherever we see devotees striving for this, we should honor and worship those devotees most in our hearts, and we should strive to take their example. And wherever we see something else, we should offer all respects, but we should pray for that devotee. Krishna save him. And those tendencies in our own hearts, which are so strong, we come to this world because we want to be in a superior position. And this is the greatest defect for devotional service, is we want to take a superior position to others. There are more facilities to confirm our superior position. And we become very attached to whatever little we get through these endeavors. And this, in essence, was the whole mentality of Duryodhana. He wanted a superior position to his brothers, the Pandavas. And he was attached. He was fearful that he may lose it. When he didn't have it, he was envious. And when he did have it, he was fearful he would lose it.
So when he wasn't king and Yudhisthira was, had power, he was simply envious and wanted to tear him down. And when ultimately he did get it, he was so fearful that he would lose it. So he was always miserable. To his own brothers. So we should not be like that. We should not be trying to take a superior position to our God brothers, our God sisters, or any Vaishnavas. But rather we should be trying to take the position of the servant of the servant of the servant. That mentality will please Krishna. And our spiritual life is based on pleasing Krishna. It's not based on material appearances. So let us all strive for this. Let us all constantly remind each other of this principle. When we meet, we should talk about these things. And we should exemplify these principles. How to serve. Lord Chaitanya instructed that to praise the Vaishnavas is the greatest praise of Krishna. To insult the Vaishnavas is the greatest insult to Krishna. So this is basic Vaishnava etiquette. To always take a role of a servant and always try to amplify, exemplify the glories of other devotees. And take joy in that. How wonderful Radhe Shyam has written so many nice literatures for Krishna consciousness. How nice Gauranga Prabhu is trying to preach to the college students. How nice Rupa Raghunath is so steadily serving the deities. How nice Vishakha Priya is always running for more and more service. How nice is Krishnananda Prabhu preaching all over the world. In every town and village. How nice Paramhamsa Prabhu is making a holy place holy. How wonderful Vaidyanath Prabhu is spreading the glories of the holy name in the largest country in the world. How munificent is Janananda Prabhu when he says the Jayom prayers. It is like the awakening of the heart. And how he's preaching so enthusiastically and appreciating devotees so beautifully. How nice is little baby Radhika, always crying and making devotees want to come and serve her. We can see the glories in everyone. Bhakta Slava, how nicely he dances in kirtan. So let this be our meditation. Adrasha Prabhu, who is somehow being tolerant like a tree as he's sitting through this class of mine. We should always be looking for the glories in devotees. We should always be trying to take, we should be happy to see devotees getting Krishna's mercy. And we should be always anxious to help them get more mercy. And for ourselves, we just want to serve. I sometimes told you about that one very humble and pure Brijbasi that I lived with for some time, Ghanashyam. He was
so genuinely in this mood of servant. He had his deities. Nobody knew about these deities. Nobody knew about him. He was a prince. He was a prince, the son of a king. And he had what's equal to millions of dollars and palaces and princesses and everything. Somehow his father was religious. They went to Vrindavan. He was from Rajasthan. They went to Vrindavan and he decided to stay. His father said, "No, you cannot stay. You can be a devotee and live at home." Have you heard this before? You can be a devotee and you can live at home and do puja and everything. We won't stop you. But he didn't want to live at home. He didn't want his palace. He just wanted to live in Vrindavan. So his father said, "If you don't come home, then we will disown you in the sense that you will have no longer any property." So he stayed. And his father sent various servants to try to get him back. And ultimately, after so many efforts, they told him, "If you don't come now, then you no longer have any inheritance to the kingdom." He said, "One grain of dust in Vrindavan is more valuable than my father's entire kingdom. And here, I'm laying in a bed," because he used to sleep on the ground, he had no home, he said, "of so many millions of grains of dust. How much wealth I have inherited from my real father, Krishna." So he stayed. But he had no money, nothing. He had to do madhukari and beg. And he had to just sleep on the ground, even in the winter. He had no clothes. He had to beg. He had to just pick up the scraps that people throw out. And nobody knew him. And nobody knew he was a prince. He wasn't going around Vrindavan saying, "I have renounced everything." Nobody knew who he was. They just considered him to be an insignificant beggar. And he never told anyone. For years, nobody knew. You know how finally people found out? Years and years later, decades later, his wife, the princess, she came to join him and become a sadhu. And she told people. That's how they found out. Because he'd never rejected his wife. He said, "I'm not rejecting you, but wife should follow path of husband. So if you want to live as a beggar like me, do madhukari and sleep on the ground, then you're welcome. But I will protect you, providing." So years later, she came and she did that. A message to husbands and wives all over the world. So one day he was writing on the ground with his finger in the dust the names of Radha and Krishna. And then after he would name, he would, because he had no deities, he had nothing, he would just, his sadhana would be, he would write Radha and Krishna's name on the ground with his finger, just in the dust, and then he would worship the name by chanting in front of the name. And then after he would be finished, he would wipe it out so no one would step on the holy name. So one day he was, for so many hours, he was chanting the name that he wrote of Sri Radharani and Lord Krishna. By loudly chanting the holy names. So then after the day was ending, he just erased it. But as he erased it, he felt something in the ground. And he looked, and it was gold-colored. A little piece of gold was coming out of the ground where he scraped the ground. So he was thinking, this looks like wealth. Maybe people are walking by and everyone just thinks I'm such an insignificant beggar that if I find it here, people will just take it away from me, so I will come back later. So he came back later and he dug in the ground. And what that gold was, it was the top of the head of a beautiful golden deity of Srimati Radharani. And he took it out of the ground and worshipped her. And then as he was digging, he saw there was some black stone next to Radharani. So he dug next to her. And there was a beautiful deity of Lord Krishna. And then on the base of the deity of Krishna, it said, Radha Gopi Jana Ballava. So he just started worshipping them under a tree. He had no place to take them. And he just felt that now Radha and Krishna has appeared to me, and it's my duty, it's my service, I must worship them. So he started worshipping them, and he couldn't leave them, because you can't just leave deities under a tree. So he just sat there, and as people would walk by, he would just beg for some chapati so he could offer it to the deities. And hardly anyone walked by, because he was just in the middle of a pasture. Anyways, for some years, he just slept under a tree and worshipped the deities under a tree. And then somehow or other, one sympathetic Brijvasi said, I have a closet in my hallway, and you can put the deities in the closet. So what it was is the family lived, and there was a little courtyard, just a small courtyard, very small, enclosed. And you had to walk through it to get to the other rooms of the house. And there was one closet in the courtyard. So the deities lived in the closet, and he just slept in the ground of the courtyard. For the next 50 or 60 years, that's how he lived. He just slept in a little courtyard, not even with a proper roof. And the deities were in a little closet. And he just worshipped those deities. And he was so humble and so pure in his devotion that I would go to visit him every day and spend about an hour or two. He was very old at the time. And after some months, I used to notice that this lady used to sometimes be around, and then I realized that was his wife, who left the kingdom and left being princess because she wanted to assist her husband. She slept in a little corner in another part of the courtyard. It was a very public place. So I remember when I would go there, he would just want to serve. And who was I? I wasn't a great Mahatma or Rishi. I was just a little boy at the time. I was 19, 20 years old. Nobody knew who I was, what I was. Even I didn't know who I was or what I was. But somehow I would go there and he would just be so, sit me down and give me, he always had these two big rotis and he'd give them to me. after some couple weeks of eating these rotis, somebody came and told me, "Do you know Ghanashyam has not eaten in 2 weeks?" I said, "Really? Why? Is he sick?" He said, "No, because you're eating all his rotis." I said, "What is this? He's giving them to me." I said, "Well, that's the way he is. Whatever he has, he'll give to people. He'll never keep anything for himself. Because he can't go anywhere. So people bring him 2 rotis every day to give to Gopi Janabalava, and then that's what he takes." So the next day, when I went there, he brought me his 2 rotis. And I said, "I'm not hungry today." He said, "No, no, you are hungry. I know you are hungry." And I said, "No, no, I'm not hungry." He said, "Then you take him with you, and when you're hungry." I said, "I'm sick." He said, "Then you take them with you until you're not sick." I said, "Ghanashyam, I'm not going to eat these rotis." He said, "No, no, please, you must eat these rotis." And I said, "I don't want the rotis." And he started crying. Tears were flowing from his eyes. He said, "Why will you not accept my service?" I said, "Why you will not accept my service?" And he said, "Because you haven't eaten, because these are your only rotis." He said, "No, they are not my only rotis. I have so many rotis." I said, "Show me, where are the other rotis?" He said, "They are in that room." There was a little tiny room next to the closet. I said, "Show me." He said, "There's no need to show you. You just eat these." He said, "You eat these rotis, then I'll show you." I said, "No, you show me, then I'll eat these rotis." So then I went in the room and I searched, and there was nothing there. And then he started crying. He said, "Please take these rotis." I said, "Ghanashyam, why? I can go anywhere." Because one thing sadhus learn fast is where there's free food given. Because at one time I lived as a sadhu, very traditional sadhu. And part of the tradition is as soon as you come to a place, sadhus begin to exchange notes of where you can get free rotis. Wherever there's a free kitchen, sadhus have grapevine, where they, just like we have our internet, where there's so much exchange of information. This is the sadhu's internet. They all know where to get free rotis. So at that time, in the Vrindavan village itself, there were 14 places that gave free rotis at a certain time every day. And every sadhu knew, at 10 o'clock in the morning, you go to this place, they're giving out free prasad. And if you go at 11 o'clock at this place, and 1 o'clock at this place, and 5 o'clock at this place, and 7 o'clock at this place, and it was a whole system. It's depending on when you were hungry, you knew exactly where to go. And it was all free. And you knew exactly what each place served every day. And if there was some festival where there was a free feast, the word spread amongst the sadhus. When some guru would disappear, everyone, all the sadhus would be ecstatic, because they knew after 3 days there will be a feast. When we'd see the funeral in a procession, some acharya of some mat, there would be a procession, and as soon as the procession would be, the sadhus would ask, you know, "Which mat is that guru from?" "Oh, he's from the Ram Vijay mat." "Ah, 3 days from now there'll be a big feast." noted on their palm leaves. So I knew all of these special scientific arts of living as a sadhu. So I told Ghanashyam, I can get rotis in 14 different places a day. There's no problem. But you can't go anywhere. This is yours. And then he would cry until I would eat his rotis. Another time, I was walking, and he would leave the ashram only once a day to go to the Jamuna to bring a bucket of water back for his deity to bathe him in. And he was so old and so, he was a tiny man, very small and very thin. And he would struggle to carry this bucket of Jamuna water. He would be able to carry it a few steps, then he'd have to stop and rest, and a few steps and stop and rest. And I was young. I was a young American. So I took the bucket and I said, let me carry it. He said, no, no need, no need. I said, Ghanshyam, you must let me carry this bucket. I can do it in 2 minutes. It takes you half hour. He would not let me take it. He said, I am your servant. He said, you are Gopi Janabalabha's friend. You should enjoy. But I am his servant. I should not enjoy. And another time it was winter, and I used to sleep on bank of Jamuna. You have all heard this story, but I become purified telling it. It was winter, and Vrindavan winter is very cold. Not as much as Moscow, but it's very cold. And I had no blanket, no sleeping bag. I just had one little chadar like this. So one time I was at Ghanshyam's house at night, and I was leaving to go to the Jamuna. And he said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Jamuna. He said, it is too cold. You sleep here tonight. So he insisted. And then he gave an old blanket. It was really an old, tattered blanket. And as I laid down on the ground, because it was just the ground, it was just a courtyard, he put this old blanket on me. And it made me a little warm. So then Ghanashyam laid down with no blanket. Sadhus use their arms for pillows, usually. So he laid down. Then I realized this is his blanket. So I said, Ghanashyam, this is your blanket. You must use it. He said, no need, no need. It is your blanket. I said, but you don't have a blanket. So I took the blanket and I tried to put it on him, and he just became so disturbed. He said, I will not accept, you must use this blanket. And this was what he would always tell me. He said, you are Gopi Janabalabha's friend, but I am only his servant. The duty of the servant is to serve the servants. He said, you should enjoy, but I should only serve. So I told him, then I'm not staying here, I'm going to Jamuna. So I started walking out. He said, no need, why are you going? Why are you going? I said, because you're not taking the blanket, I'm going. He said, all right, I will take the blanket. So then I laid down, and he was with the blanket, and I was without the blanket. Then I woke up at night, and I felt warm for some reason. And I didn't know why. And I looked next to me, and Ghanashyam was not sleeping. He was just laying, trembling like a leaf in the wind. He was just trembling, so His frail little skinny body was just trembling with from cold. Then I thought, where is the blanket? Then I looked and it was on me. So I decided to very quietly put it on him. But as soon as it touched him, he jumped up and he said, "No need, no need! You are Krishna's servant. I mean, you are Krishna's friend. I am only his servant. This blanket must be for you." So then we argued for about 15 minutes. Then I started walking to the Jamuna. Then he said, "All right, all right." Then he laid down and put the blanket on him. And then I laid down. As soon as I fell asleep, I woke up after some time. And I noticed next to me, Ghanashyam was laying there trembling without a blanket, and I was feeling a little warm. Then I looked, the blanket was on me. So we went through this about 5 or 6 times that night. Anyways, he was not looking for fame. He just wanted to serve the servants of the Lord. He just wanted to be a servant. This is the mood of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We simply want to serve the Vaishnavas. Our service is our wealth. So we should all be striving and living to achieve this principle. And we should all be trying to help each other to achieve this principle. Simple living, high thinking. As soon as we want position, as soon as we want, we have selfish desires, then our whole life becomes complex. But if we just want to serve, our life is very simple. So just be the servant of the servant of the servant. That's all. Keep that spirit as the principle of our lives, and how much happiness we will achieve by the mercy of Krishna, and how much eagerness in this mood we will have to hear the glories of Krishna, to chant his holy names. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So Vidura wanted to give the praise and the glory and the opportunity to Maitreya Rishi, because he was actually a dear servant of the servant of Lord Krishna. And for this reason, we worship Uddhava. And we aspire to follow in his footsteps. Thank you very much. Is there any questions?
Thank you very much, Maharaj. Well, as you've asked to speak something, I just happened to open up this little book on a page here, so I'll just read what it says. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj said, let me not desire anything but the highest good for my worst enemy. Those favored by God will find their paths set with thorns. In the world of Maya, averse to the Lord, full of trials and tribulations, only patience, humility, and respect to others are the friends of Hari Bhajan. Little question. Sometimes devotees say japa should be chanted very, very quietly. And some say, exactly what is the standard for chanting japa?
Japa should be chanted in the way you could best hear. Srila Prabhupada, when he would explain, kirtan is loudly. Of course, according to time and circumstance. In 22nd Avenue, Prabhupada would have any soft kirtan. Because if it was loud, the neighbors would throw water that would come through the ceiling and fall on all the devotees.
Generally, kirtan is loud enough to make that vibration heard by so many others. And for japa, loudly means loud enough so we can audibly hear what we are chanting. It could be very quiet, but it should be loud enough so that we could hear, so that we could fix our concentration on that sound vibration. Does that answer your question? Generally, japa means soft chanting. However, we should hear it. I remember sometimes seeing Srila Prabhupada sitting and chanting. And he would chant so soft that you could hardly hear anything unless you put your ear right. He would just be chanting very, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. In Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he would sometimes chant very soft like that. But sometimes he would pace in his courtyard at Godrandweep, and he would chant his japa so loud that the neighbors, they would time their day according to his japa. It's like in some places the bell of the clock rings and you know it's 12 o'clock. Well, devotees would know the Brahma Muhurta hour was coming because Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. So japa could be loud, it could be soft. It should be in a way that we could best hear, that we could best fix our consciousness on the beautiful sound of Krishna Nam. To add anything? Janarand Prabhu? Any other? Vaidyanath Prabhu, could you share some realization or any questions? And Prabhu,
that this process of taking remnants should not offend the Vaishnava. So, in a practical sense, like Kalidas would do it after the person had left. So, should a devotee follow in his footsteps, or what is the best way?
Chananand Prabhu, you are expert at getting the remnants of Vaishnavas. Could you answer this question?
Very well. Well, that is ideal. However, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami does say, by any means, you should get the remnants of Vaishnava. The foot wash, the dust from the feet, and the remnants of the Vaishnavas, these are Mahabala. These three substances are greatly powerful. And we should somehow or other get them by any means. But at the same time, it should be done in a way that does not displease the Vaishnava. Because we should not hurt devotees' hearts. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much.